Leaders, you have important decisions to make for the November 5th election. Tonight's forum is a great opportunity to learn about the candidates before you could vote, so let's begin. Okay, so now we'll do the opening remarks, and we'll go in alphabetical order by first name. In your opening statement, please introduce yourself and share why you're running for D1 supervisor, and please stay within the 1 minute time limit. We'll start with Supervisor Connie.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm Connie Chan, District 1 Supervisor, proudly representing the Richmond. I am first-generation immigrant, came to San Francisco's Chinatown with my single mom and younger brother when I was 13 years old. Prior to running for office, I spent almost two decades in city government, former aide to Supervisor Sophie Maxwell, our former District Attorney Kamala Harris, and different city department. In 2021, I took office as your District 1 Supervisor. At that time, our priority was making sure our tenants stay housed, our small business can stay in the Richmond and thrive. And as your budget committee chair, I make sure that we have funding for after-school programming for our youth, food security services for our seniors, and to make sure that critical services are delivered for all the working families in San Francisco. As our city faced a ballooning $1 billion budget deficit, it's the reason why I'm running for re-election, to make sure our city government works for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next candidate is Jen Nosikoff.
Thank you, Michelle. Hello?
Can you hear me? Just point it towards your mouth and...
Great, thank you. Yeah. Oh, there we go. Thanks, Michelle. Hi, I am Jen Nosikoff. It is so nice to be here with you all tonight. I am running for district supervisor here in District 1. I am a physician assistant. My background is in medicine. If I get elected, I will be the only member of the Board of Supervisors with a medical background. I'm a public school parent here in the Richmond. I live in the Inner Richmond with my husband, Rich, and our two, I have a 7-year-old and a 1.5-year-old. And my background for candidate training program was through Moms Demand Action, and I am proud to say that I am the only candidate for supervisor in the entire city to be formally endorsed by every town for gun safety. Fighting for safe communities for our kids is the utmost important thing for me, and I look forward to doing that as your supervisor.
Thank you, Jen. Next we have Marjan Philauer.
Hi, good evening, everyone. My name is Marjan Philauer, also joining other candidates on this stage for supervisor. I was born here in the Richmond at French Hospital. My parents immigrated here in 1968 from Iran and the Philippines. I've spent many years on Capitol Hill. I started my career on Capitol Hill for the late Congressman Tom Lantos. I worked for Governor Gray Davis for many years before coming back here to San Francisco, where my husband Byron and I are raising our three children in the neighborhood. I co-founded our local small business association, the Balboa Village Merchants Association. I was president of my PTA for many years. I'm running because I think we can do better in this neighborhood. We have seen crime affect not just small businesses, but our local neighbors. And I think it's really important to have a supervisor that is experiencing what we are experiencing here in the neighborhood and is going to take a hands-on approach to building the community and also ensuring that we get those services and give residents access to the supervisor's office, which is a very difficult and 7-day-a-week job. Thank you.
Thank you, Marjan. And finally, we have candidate Sherman De Silva.
Can you hear me? Thank you for all being here today. Thank you, the League of Women Voters. My name is Sherman De Silva. I've lived in the district my entire life. Went to schools here in the neighborhood. I work in the neighborhood. I feel that the condition of the neighborhood has gone downhill over the last couple of years. I want to bring it back to the way it used to be. We want to have a clean street. We want to make sure that trash cans are emptied. We want to make sure that traffic lights are installed on Fulton and California. These are busy corridors. They were busy when I was a kid. We're 30 years later, and still we don't have traffic lights on some of these roads. They lead to fatalities. We need to get back to the basic stuff, what government is supposed to take care of, making sure the streets are clean, make sure that we have police on the streets, making sure that the traffic lights are installed on streets. And those are the important things. If elected, that's what I'll focus on. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sherman. Okay, so now we'll start off with our questions, and we'll go in reverse order this time. So, it's a little out of order, but anyway, the question is, package theft is a concern of D1 residents. If you could wave a magic wand and implement any solutions for this problem, what would it be? Sherman?
That's an interesting question. Probably one thing we need is we have to have more law enforcement on the streets. When you don't have a police presence on the street, it leads to some of these things. One other thing we might want to do is public spaces have roads, they lead to fatalities. We need to get back to the basic stuff, what government is supposed to take care of, making sure the streets are clean, make sure that we have police on the streets, making sure that the traffic lights are installed on streets. And those are the important things. If elected, that's what I'll focus on. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sherman. Okay, so now we'll start off with our questions, and we'll go in reverse order this time. So, it's a little out of order. But anyway, the question is, package theft is a concern of D1 residents. If you could wave a magic wand and implement any solutions for this problem, what would it be? Sherman?
That's an interesting question. Probably one thing we need is we have to have more law enforcement on the streets. When you don't have a police presence on the street, it leads to some of these things. One other thing we might want to do is in public spaces have lockers, so free lockers, so people can have their packages delivered to public facilities and then come by and pick it up. That might be one solution for that specific problem. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Little logistical problem here. Marjan, yeah.
So package thefts, I mean, that's something that I think many of us here, both on the stage and in the audience, can relate to. I talk a lot about our police staffing shortage. We no longer have a funding problem in our police department. We have a staffing challenge, and we're seeing it on our streets every day. When we talk about the Richmond police station having 46, 47 officers, and at any given shift, there are 6 officers and 3 cars from the beach to Divisadero. We aren't the only ones who know that statistic. The people who are committing crimes know that, and we need to have more officers on the street because the police presence is what will help deter crime. Now, that is, of course, in addition to the doorbell cameras that we have. It's setting up neighborhood watch in your neighborhood. It's ensuring that we're keeping an eye out for each other. But what we must acknowledge is that our police staffing shortage, which isn't helped by leaders in office who campaign on dismantling the police, that is not a helpful narrative. We need to support our police department and support recruitment of police officers so that these crimes, no matter how they're perceived, can stop.
Please hold your applause till the end. I'll give everyone an opportunity to clap. Okay, Jen.
All right. Package theft sucks. I had a very important package get stolen off my porch when I was about 6 months pregnant. It's so intrusive and it's so personal. And I recognize how important this problem is for so many people, and that there isn't. I don't know that there's one magic wand thing that we can do, which I know is the question. But there are a number of things that we have to do. I do like the idea of having lockers. I do think that we have to solve this problem with technology and also with behavior modifications. The things that I have done personally at my house are make it so that the packages can get delivered behind a safe space. And that might not be feasible for everyone, but really trying to meet people where they are and come up with solutions that we can leverage technology, neighborhood watch, and working with the package delivery companies to come up with solutions together so that doesn't happen as much as it does. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Jen. And now we'll hear from Supervisor Connie.
Thank you. I think that when it comes to package theft, we can see that there's a few strategies that we probably want to continue to deploy, which is really happening right now. We know that a lot of families and households already have cameras at their doorsteps. I think there are moments that perhaps we need to continue to see what we can do to, again, with delivery services, with our United Postal offices, just to see making sure that these deliveries both have a better tracking systems for the both that those that receive the packages at the time that they receive it and also the time when they're delivered. Clearly that more can be done, but I think at the end of the day, what I also believe is neighborhood watch group. If we know our neighbors and we know what's going on and we care for each other, that we can also look out for each other. And I think that's one more layer that we can actually really think about, is that it's not just for package theft, but it's really all kinds of public safety concerns that we experience as a neighborhood. Is when it comes down to it, if we get to know each other, we care for each other, perhaps we can actually also help watch out for each other. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Chan. Okay, so the next question is, an overall sentiment exists among residents that there is little to no police presence in the district, except around major events like outside lands. How would you work to establish a better rapport between police and the community and make people safer? And we'll start with Marjan this time.
It's no secret that we are extremely short on police officers, and it's great to talk about what would be amazing to have foot beats in every merchant corridor, which is what we should aspire to, but we have a station here in the Richmond that receives between 125 and 200 dispatches a day. You have 6 police officers on every shift, and they must prioritize the most violent crimes. On top of that, as we've read in the paper or just walking down the street, we have several merchants that have gotten broken into even over the past month. We have garages that have been broken into. And I think what we need to do is, one, utilize technology, like the technologies that were proposed in Proposition E that I supported in March, to ensure that in light of the severe police staffing shortage, we have technology to leverage that shortage. In the end, we are going to have to recruit more police officers, but I think we need to ask ourselves, would any of you join our police department? Would any of you encourage your children to join the police department? And if not, why not? It's a basic city service. It's an honorable profession. And we've had leaders in office who have disparaged them for too long. And that is why we are facing part of what we're facing right now with the police staffing shortage.
Thank you, Marjan. Next, we'll hear from Sherman.
So like I mentioned, I work in the neighborhood on 20th and Gary, and sometimes in the evening, we can go like 20 minutes without seeing a police car pass by. I don't think that gives residents a secure feeling. Having more officers in the neighborhood deters crime, and that's really what we need to strive for. We need to get more officers on the ground so that they're visible. Deterring crime really will help for security for the people who live in the neighborhood and for businesses, because if you're going to do bad things, you're not going to do it if the chances that you're going to get caught are higher. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherman. Next, we'll hear from Supervisor Connie.
Thank you. So, since 2020, our police department has a increased budget, a total of, to date, $153 million as a budget committee chair. I know that. Not only that, we have now an annual budget for our police department well over $800 million. As your budget committee chair, we have approved contract to increase salary for our police officer by 10% for the next 3 fiscal years. We also have provided them the retention bonus for 5th year, 7th year, and 8th year on the force, all with the goal is that we can retain our existing force, but to also to continue to recruit. We invest $600,000 specifically for recruitment specialists to continue to recruit our police officer. And every year we have actually funded 4 police academy classes in the last 2 fiscal years. Now, but we know that we're still about roughly 300 to 500 police officers short. According to Police Chief Scott, it would take us about 5 years to get there. And so we need to get there, but I think we start to paying them well. Thank you.
Thank you, Connie. Next, we'll hear from Jen.
Can you please repeat the question?
Yes. An overall sentiment exists among residents that there is no little to no police presence in the district except around major events like outside lands. How would you work to establish a better rapport between police and the community and make people feel safer?
Great, thank you. That's a big question. How do we establish rapport between the police and the community? Because it is it's no secret that we don't have our community doesn't have a good relationship with the police. And I have been talking with a lot of people over the last year, and I didn't realize the depth to which that was a problem. I don't believe that that is solvable by throwing money at the situation, by putting more police out there. We have to have more community events with our police officers. I have met with Captain Canning, and I very much believe that if every officer in the United States was like him, we would be in a very different position. But that's not the case. And so we need to, as leaders, encourage our police force to work on their end, to do things for the community, have more events. I know we have National Night Out, but that will be how I would work to establish rapport. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, moving on to the next question. We'll start with Sherman. And what is your stance on Prop K, the proposal to close the Upper Great Highway from Lincoln to Sloat? Tell us why you support or oppose it. Also, if Prop K were to fail, what would be your suggestion regarding what we do with this stretch of the Great Highway?
I don't support closing the Great Highway. San Francisco has a general policy. We want to reduce pollution in the neighborhood. We want to reduce fatalities. Closing the Great Highway does not achieve these two goals. In the morning when I drive my daughter to school, I can drive that stretch of roadway in about 5 minutes to go from one end to the other. If the highway is closed, it takes 30 minutes to do that same stretch. To me, that does not make sense when we have a roadway that's able to accommodate cars. I support keeping the roadway open, enlarging the pathway that's to the left, make it larger so that it has space for bikes and joggers, so that we can have both. This does not need to have become a all or nothing for between cars and pedestrians and bikes. We can have both and achieve the goals that San Francisco has set. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherman. Next, we'll hear from Supervisor Connie.
Well, Prop K is a very binary proposition. It's one or nothing. It means that you close the roads to all vehicles at all times. No on K, because if we say no on K, it gives us the opportunity to have a compromise of a design. No on K means that it gives us time to hold city departments like Rec and Park at SFMTA accountable for funding, for design, for timeline to deliver a project and improvements in the area. No on K means give us the opportunity to bring Richmond, Sunset, our stakeholders together to figure out a compromise and a design that actually works for everyone, not just few people. So I am a firm on no on K.
Thank you, Connie. Next we'll hear from Jen.
Hi, I am the only candidate for supervisor in District 1 to be formally endorsing Prop K, and I'm very proud of that. I know that this is a contentious issue, but we have the opportunity here to take a road that is going to become redundant, especially when the Great Highway south of Sloat closes, and do something incredible and historic, not only for the city, but for the state. This is set to become one of the largest pedestrian projects in state history. And I believe that our beaches should be places we go to, not something we drive through. We absolutely need to be thinking holistically about how people move to and through the city. And we can achieve that with Sunset Boulevard improvements, with routing people, you'll still be able to turn left on Lincoln and go down Sunset Boulevard and working with the supervisors in the Sunset to make that possible. But yeah.
Thank you, Jen. And finally, we'll hear from Marjan.
So we elect supervisors to represent us at City Hall on the Board of Supervisors, not just to pass legislation and ordinances, but also because we want someone who it's their job to work with bureaucracy like SFMTA, which has yet to give us a comprehensive transit plan, not just for this neighborhood, but the entire city. So I am against Proposition K. There's several reasons for that. One, I've talked to thousands of residents, not just in their homes, but door to door since last year. My neighbors have come to me in tears because they have to pick up their kid from school, because they have to take their in-laws to the doctor. When my mother-in-law was still alive, we would use Great Highway way more than we do now to get her to the doctor. And I think that it's an abdication of a key responsibility of our elected officials to take something like a road and say, you guys decide. And the Outer Richmond is disproportionately affected by the closure of Great Highway. We need just more responsible leaders who are going to do the jobs we elected them to do and figure it out in a way that will serve residents, especially in the Outer Richmond. Thank you.
Thank you, Marjan. Moving on to the next question. The San Francisco Department of the Environment's Climate Action Plan calls for cutting net carbon emissions to zero by 2040. One of the goals of the Climate Action Plan is to make 80% of all trips low carbon by 2030. If elected, what is your plan to make local and regional transit more efficient, increase ridership, and close the overall funding gap that San Francisco is currently facing? We'll start with Supervisor Connie.
This is the reason why I support Yes on L, Community Transit Act, that's on the November ballot. It is a first critical step to say, what can we do to continue to fund our public transit system, but making people to pay their fair share instead of a regressive sales tax increase or any other type of tax increase. We making sure that people who benefit and profit from our public space and roads pay for their fair share, like Uber, like Lyft. We also need to figure out a way to continue to fund our public transit, but also make it more efficient. And that is the reason why, as a County Transportation Authority commissioner, we funded the mobility study specifically for District 1 to really figure out what can we do to improve Fulton for safety, what can we do to continue to improve our 38 Gary BRT and many areas, and also to make sure that people can make both short trip and long trip. That will be including, hopefully in the future, okay, BART to the Richmond. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we'll hear from Jen.
Getting people on public transit is one of the core tenets of my platform and is something that I am very, very, very passionate about. I am very excited about the opportunity to bring a subway to the Richmond District. And it's not something that I'm just gonna stand up here and say, oh, that would be nice to have. I'm gonna go to bat for that. I am going to actively seek out ways that we can make that happen. And we can make it easier to get downtown. If we can get downtown, if we can get from the Richmond to downtown in 10, 15 minutes, that takes so many cars off the road. There are times when I will drive downtown because the 5 Fulton takes too long to come. We need to separate funding for transit from ridership and make huge investments in increasing reliability of transportation, our public transportation, and increasing the cleanliness and encouraging people to ride. And we need to take a risk, and we need to invest in that.
Thank you, Jen. Next, Marjan, please.
So the issue of climate comes up a lot. I think it's something that we're all experiencing, not just here in the Richmond, but in the rest of the world. I also support Proposition L. I think it's important to invest in our transit infrastructure. But I also think You can't make people get on the bus. The service has to be reliable. The service has to be clean. The service has to be safe. And when you have students back in May trying to get home from school, and then a guy with a taser deploys the taser on the bus because police officer shortage, right? And we don't have officers getting on the bus a couple of times during their shifts, it makes people reticent to get on the bus. So not only do we need a cohesive transportation plan, and we need to encourage riding the bus, that doesn't mean that you can't drive a car in this city. My minivan just died after 15 years, but I had 7 kids in there at any given time, right? I mean, I couldn't get them all on the bus and get them to all these different practices. We need to acknowledge that there are differences in this city. We need to acknowledge that the 38 Geary has the highest ridership west of the Mississippi and proceed accordingly. Thank you.
Thank you, Marjan. And Sherman?
So I think this question kind of leads into the last question. If we want to reduce carbon in the environment, I don't think, again, closing the Great Highway achieves that goal. But moving on to this question, if we want people to ride Muni, it has to be safe. The number one complaint from people, they don't feel it's safe. So we need to have more officers in the neighborhood so we can have some of those officers patrol the buses so that riders feel safe. The other thing I think we need to do is, people who ride bus, you can't go to the grocery store on the bus sometimes because you can't carry the packages from the bus stop to the supermarket. So I think we need to think about, how do we bridge that link between using Muni and getting to our final destination? Maybe we need to think about a shuttle service that runs from major bus stops to your door so that people can feel that they can get from point to point on transit without using a car. And I think that's worthwhile. If we need to spend, add a sales tax to pay for that, I think that is a valuable thing to get people into transit. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherman. Moving on to the next question about affordable housing. Of the roughly 82,000 units that need to be built in San Francisco by 2031, how many of these units do you think will be located in District 1? How many would be affordable housing versus market rate? And how will you include families in your plans for affordable housing? What policies would you pursue to meet the housing needs of regular working class people in San Francisco? And we'll kick this one off with Jen.
The housing shortage. The way that we solve this and what we need to be doing right now is building more housing and upzoning in the district. And some of the plans that include upzoning, especially along our transit corridors, higher along the transit corridors and then just a little bit throughout the Richmond, seem like a very sensible way to do that. We also have to be coming up with policies to help make the people that work in the city, live in the city. We want our police officers to be able to live here. We want our teachers. I want the teachers at my kids' public school to be able to afford to live in the city. And it's a really hard problem to solve when you live in one of the most desirable neighborhoods in the country, in the world. Is when you can't build enough supply to meet the infinite demand, what do we do strategically to help? And those are the problems that we'll solve. That's how I will approach this problem.
Thank you, Jen. Marjan?
So some of you have heard me tell the story about my 3 kids and when they graduate from preschool, having to tell them why so many of their classmates won't be continuing in kindergarten and they've had to move somewhere else. So in my family, my kids have learned at a very young age how expensive it is and how difficult it is to stay here in San Francisco, and how challenging it can be for families, middle-class families, all kinds of families, to stay here in San Francisco. When we talk about the housing element, which, by the way, in January 2023, the entire Board of Supervisors approved the housing element, when you look at the revision to the housing element, and even on Geary Boulevard, which actually has been zoned for 4 to 6 stories in the middle and 6 to 8 on the corners for almost 30 years, and remains that way through the revised housing element, what we see is a very heavy transit corridor where there is room for creation of housing for middle-class families.
To say that we need to exclusively create 100% affordable subsidized housing only, that's unicorn housing. That doesn't exist anymore. There's a way to create housing to keep families, working people, teachers, police officers here in San Francisco.
Thank you, Marjan. Next is Supervisor Connie.
Thank you. Two key elements to build any type of housing, it's really land and money. And that's why you find a success story at 4200 Gary, 100%, 98 units, 100% affordable, 98 units of senior housing. That is funded by the Prop A housing bond from 2019, and that we know it's 100% affordable for our seniors. We can do more and we can do better, and that's why we need to continue to support bond dollars so that we can fund these projects. And that's why not just affordable housing, I also co-sponsor a legislation which allow the city to issue revenue bond to build middle income and workforce housing. We know that's key. And this is also what you're seeing. We also want to see continue to have partnership with our developers and property owners like Alexandra Theater to make sure that they too have the opportunity to build housing for the Richmond, but that we also, in those conversations, we make sure that we help them upzone that space, but they will also build family housing of 2 to 3 bedrooms. That is what the Richmond needs.
Thank you. Next, we'll have Jen. Oh, sorry, I already turned the page. Sorry. Since the audience has been so attentive, if anyone wants to clap for the candidates right now, please clap. Okay, so we'll move on to the next question, which is, a factor in addressing homelessness in San Francisco is preventing people from becoming unhoused in the first place. What kind of protections, programs, or policies do you support to keep people in their homes? And we'll start that one with Marjan.
So homelessness has been an intractable issue here in the city for decades. It's become more acute over the past several years. I think that we need to have more, and we need to sustain renter protections, protect renters from eviction, and ensure that we have a safety net in place so that families can stay here living in the city. However, when we look at what's happening with homelessness and the lack of leadership around mental health services, about how we can ensure that those who are living on our streets, which isn't safe for them or for the neighborhoods, we can do much more by ensuring that we have those laws in place and we have stronger conservatorship laws so that we can get people the mental health services that they need and deserve, as well as wraparound housing and services so that those who are living on the streets can get into housing and shelter and move and get a job. We don't do enough of that. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Marjan. Sherman?
So I didn't get to answer the question about the development. So let me say, I work on Gary, and I think we can add a lot of units on Gary. I think what we should do is we should allow property owners to add units onto their property. And if they do that and they leave them rent controlled, that we will not charge them any increase in their property tax. That's an incentive for them to add units onto their existing property. And the city should waive all of the permit fees and the inspection fees. And that's an incentive for people to build onto existing structures and add more units in the neighborhood. That leads to the second question is, what do? We can, to make it easier for people to live in the neighborhood, we can add more units in the neighborhood, make sure that they're rent-controlled. Rent-controlled units preserve people's ability to stay in the neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherman. Next, we'll hear from Supervisor Connie.
I absolutely agree that the best way to solve homelessness is to prevent it from happening at first place. It's the reason why we make sure that tenants to stay housed and that we legislate, or I legislate, what we call a union at home, allowing tenants living in a building with 5 units and more can form a union. They can actually collectively bargain with their landlord to make sure that be it about rent increase or their living environment. We also know that a lot of our seniors are really the one who's suffering homelessness or the challenge with homelessness. That's why we support rental, like seniors' rental subsidies as a budget committee chair to make sure that we continue to fund that. Rent control, absolutely. That's why let's actually say yes to Prop 33, allowing us to have a local rent control to make sure that we help tenants to stay house. Now, I have to say, at the end of the day, though, we have affordable housing units available in the city. What it is that is not getting out. If and when I re-elected, I will make sure the lottery program for affordable housing works for us.
Thank you, Connie. And finally, Jen, how would you work to keep people in their homes?
Yeah, there's a lot of great ideas that have already been said, and I'll talk about one specific thing that I will focus on to keep people housed, and that is food security. We have a lot of food insecure folks in the district, and people shouldn't have to choose between food and rent. And we have programs. We have a lot of amazing community-based organizations like the Richmond Neighborhood Center that work with the food bank to help distribute healthy food choices to people, giving people food choices that are culturally appropriate, that are fresh, that are accessible and sometimes taking the food to people, to seniors that are homebound, which the Richmond Neighborhood Center and other organizations do in the city. But really focusing on food security as a way to keep people housed.
Thank you. We have another question now around homelessness, and we'll start with Marjan. Considering recent policies on homelessness in various U.S. cities, what's your view on criminalizing homelessness versus treating it as a socioeconomic issue? What specific actions would you propose to address homelessness in our community?
So I don't think homelessness is not a crime. I certainly don't believe so. No one I know believes being homeless is a crime. I've been asked a lot about the court injunction that was recently lifted and asked about aggressive sweeps. There's nothing aggressive about enforcing the law and looking out for the public health of those who are both suffering in our streets and the neighborhoods around them. For so long, I mean, the police have come up a lot in this forum, and that court injunction made it so that our officers who we have tasked, either through the police commission or our legislators, to do a particular job, they couldn't move individuals who are experiencing homelessness off the streets into services for several reasons. And now, because of that ruling, we have another tool to ensure that folks are getting help. I think that we need to look at these nonprofits that have 1,400 contracts and three commissions overseeing them, like the Department of Homelessness, and really elect leaders to office who are going to make these processes more efficient, so that we can really look at where the resources are going.
Thank you. And Sherman?
All right, so homelessness has different facets here, okay? There are people who truly have fallen through the cracks and need to get back in the system. There's some people that have mental issues. So we need to separate the two. Allowing the police department to clear these tent encampments on the streets allows us the ability to help the people whatever their specific needs are. If they need to get into housing, we can help them get into housing. If they need medical treatment, we can help them get medical treatment. It is a tool that the police can use to clear the streets, to make sure the streets are safe, and to help the people who need the help get the help. Otherwise, a lot of people, they'll take the path of least resistance and they won't accept the help. We needed that tool to allow the police to get people into the system so that we can get them the help that they need. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherman. And Supervisor Connie?
We cannot arrest homelessness away. The reality is that we have to make sure that our police officer, especially a short staffing of it, they focus on violent crime. What we can do is continue to deploy our street crisis team out there to assist people, and that we make sure that people who have mental health illness and drug addiction get the help that they need. It's the reason why I supported Governor Newsom's care court system, Susan Eggman's SB State Bill 48. 3 to make sure that we continue to reform mental health services and supported California 1 ballot measure just we passed in March for $6 billion of bonds dollars that we can build more mental health facilities programming. And those are the things that we can need, that we should have to help these individuals. Meanwhile, at the end of the day, to end homelessness is to house our homeless individual. So let's make sure we have shelter, we have our SRO, we have our affordable housing, and we have our middle income housing to build a pathway to be successfully housed. Thank you.
Thank you. And Jen?
Can you repeat the question one more
yes.
time?
Yes. So considering the recent policies on homelessness in various U.S. cities, what's your view on criminalizing homelessness versus treating it as a socioeconomic issue? And what specific actions would you propose to address homelessness in our community?
This is, I want to acknowledge that this is a very big, heavy issue. I have spent my entire professional career taking care of people. That is what I know how to do. That is my default. I know that addiction and mental health are big, tough challenges, and there are people that specialize in taking care of people with addiction. I also know that people experiencing homelessness are it is not a monolith. There are a number of reasons that people are homeless, and figuring out a way to address people that don't want to follow the rules versus people that can't follow the rules. We have to maintain public safety. We have to be able to say not everything is okay to do everywhere, always. And it is a, yeah, I'll stop there.
Thank you, Jen. All right, moving on to a lighter topic, the farmers market. The question is, we have a fantastic farmers market at 6th and Clement. Would you support an additional market on a different day for those on the other side of Geary? And also, might it be possible for it to be more like the Alemany farmers market, which seems more affordable? We'll start with Sherman.
So I think any time we can get people out walking around and visiting the neighborhood, I think is a good thing. I think it would be a great idea to have another one on the outer side of the neighborhood. I'm not sure how big it can be because it does not always benefit the restaurants or the businesses in that area, depending on what type of business you are. So. How big it is, we might have to discuss how big it is, but definitely it's a good idea to have something in the on the outer side. Thank you.
Thank you. Connie?
We love our farmers market. We definitely also love our night market. And most recently, we also have a film festival by Balboa Theater. These are all great events. In fact, we're going to have another night market on September 21st. You should all come. And then we have our Autumn Festival in the Inner Richmond. These are all been the community events that the Richmond's been having. We also have our art walk that is coming up in October. I think we can do many different things. It doesn't have to be just the farmers market. Many things that fits different characters and uniqueness of all our neighborhood, like be it Outer Balboa, be it Inner Clement, or even the heart of the Richmond, which is the Central Clement. I think we can do many, many things. But most importantly, I think it has to be coming from our community, from our small businesses, from our stakeholders. They have to be the one that say, yes, this is what we want to do. And as a supervisor, is our job is to make sure we fight funding for them. We make sure that we help them cut the city hall red tape and to get it done.
Thank you, Connie. And Jen, farmers market in another spot that's more affordable?
Absolutely. I got very excited when you asked that question. I want to know if there are people that are currently working on and who to talk to about being partnering to help make that a reality. I am very much in full support of that. Our farmers market is, especially the farmers market on Clement Street, is one of the things that I think is the coolest part of our neighborhood. I love going out and canvassing there. We joke sometimes that, like, even after the election, we'll still go out on the corner. There are some young girls that come and see, and they think that I live there on the corner because that's the only place they see me out holding signs. It is just an amazing way to meet your neighbors. Do everything that we can do, all of the events that Supervisor Chan mentioned, to continue to build community are so fundamental to the overall health of our neighborhood. And when we can couple that to more affordable local healthy food choices, we can solve a number of problems and even help tying back to housing stability. So very much supportive.
Thank you, Jen. Okay, San Francisco has faced some challenges related to... Oh, I'm sorry.
Can I answer?
No. Sorry.
Okay. Now you're all waiting to hear my answer. So actually, 3 years ago, I worked with several merchants on Balboa Street, and we conducted a survey of 2,000 neighbors about bringing a farmer's market to Outer Balboa. We also talked with several business owners on Balboa Street and the Agricultural Institute of Marin. So this can happen, but in order for that to, and I'll tell you what happened in just a minute. So Agricultural Institute of Marin was very interested in talking about it. They surveyed the area, talked to merchants as well. We found through our survey that 85% of those surveyed who lived in the neighborhood would walk to the farmer's market. So a couple things. One, putting a farmer's market together is going to need the support of an entity like Agricultural Institute of Marin, which also has instituted EBT so that everyone can shop at the farmer's market, regardless of income. We can up that a little bit. But we also need to address challenges and concerns that our merchants have, for example, how it impacts their business. And there are ways to mitigate those economic impacts so that it actually increases foot traffic and the customer base for our local merchants, in addition to residents who had some concerns as well. But I believe it can happen, and I think the Outer Richmond is a place to do it. We just need a little bit more work. So thanks.
Thank you, Marjan, and sorry for skipping you. okay, so... Our next question is, San Francisco has faced some challenges related to ethical behavior in the past several years. What would you do to reform our checks and balances and transparency around political contributions, contract awards, and other city-focused programs to ensure that residents have clarity and the information they need to make more informed decisions, and how can we control these outliers who have participated in some unethical behavior? Supervisor Connie?
Well, we know that when I first took office in 2021, that was the Mohammed Nuru and Harlan Kelly. These were just the two of the many department heads that end up either were arrested, prosecuted, or have to actually step down. At that time, the controller has done a public integrity audit and report. The theme is very straightforward: tone from the top. Tone from the top. It means that all elected officials should actually set example about what it means to have a good and clean government. And that we can see that time and time again, the voters actually have supported to restricting gifting and receive gifts, legislation, and ballot measures. And I have to say, this is the reason why I have actually stopped contract like San Francisco Safe, that we know that is a public safety contract, nonprofit, contracted with the police department, that end up being shut down because of corruption. And in fact, the executive director is now arrested and prosecuted.
Thank you, Supervisor Connie. Jen?
We're never going to get rid of corruption in politics. There are always going to be bad actors and bad people doing good things. I say there's good people that do good things, there's bad people that do bad things, there's good people that do bad things, and there's bad people that do good things. It gets very, very complicated, and it gets really, really hard to sometimes separate behavior from people. Accountability is huge.
Whistleblower protections are fundamental, especially when we talk about issues like sexual assault and sexual assault in politics. And we have to have safe reporting mechanisms for people, and then we need independent oversight, and we need robust ethics department, and we also need to lead by example. One of the ways that we root out corruption is we don't participate in it, and we have a zero tolerance policy for it on our staff and in our communities. Thank you.
Thank you, Jen. Marjan?
So I agree. We need increased accountability. We need increased transparency. We need to reform our commission system with 130 boards and commissions of unelected individuals overseeing some multi-million dollar departments. We have a Department of Homelessness that's overseen by 3 commissions, not elected by anyone, 1,400 contracts. None of them have, there's the audit, like the accounting audit, but an actual forensic audit to see where money is going. We need to look at city-funded nonprofits that actually work on political campaigns when they should be doing nonprofit work. I think that comes with transparency and accountability. I think our election laws are amongst the most stringent in the country, which I think it's excellent. But we also need to make these laws easy to understand. You hear a lot about these laws every 4 years when everybody's running for office, but the everyday person should be able to understand what those laws are so that they can also participate. The complication and the kind of Byzantine nature of what we're seeing in our laws as a city, both in campaigns and also in nonprofits, are what keep everyday San Franciscans from participating.
Thank you, Marjan. And Sherman?
So I think the major problem we have, the corruption problem, is a symptom of a bigger problem. The problem is the average person in San Francisco does not understand how city government works. And one of the reasons that happens is because the voters and people who have been elected have made the city so complicated that nobody knows who's responsible for what and how things get done. If anybody has read the ballot simplification ballot measure, and you look at the way it is right now and the way what is proposed, most people, if they read that the way it is right now, you're confused already who's responsible for many of the tasks that are supposed to happen in San Francisco. I believe the way you solve this problem is we need to revisit a lot of the legislation that's passed by voters and a lot of the legislation that's passed by the elected officials, and we need to unwind some of that stuff so that it is much more simpler, so that the average person understands the way the government's supposed to work and who's responsible for each facet. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherman. Next, we have a new proposal to enforce a citywide overnight parking ban for RVs and other oversized vehicles is being discussed. Do you support or oppose this proposal? And we'll start with Jen this time.
I understand that this is an issue mostly on the south side of the city. To the best of my knowledge, we have a bit of an issue with RVs on Fulton, but this isn't a big, as I've been talking with voters and in our district, not a huge issue here. And so I don't have a strong feeling either way on how we should handle this. I think it's we really need to leave this, we need to work with supervisors in districts where this is a bigger issue, listen to their example, and find ways to resolve this diplomatically. If we are going to say that you can't put your RV on a street, we should have some options for housing for people that are already here. It's different if you're going to bring your RV and park when that's the rule, then that's a different conversation. But when we're talking about people that have been established in their RVs, we need to treat that with compassion, and we need to treat that a little differently than we would just generally setting laws for the city.
Thank you, Jen. Marjan?
So I was driving my kids to school the other week and saw an RV on Fulton with a for rent sign in the window. I don't believe that RVs are an acceptable form of housing for families or people who are trying to make a life in San Francisco. I understand the purpose of RVs, but I think we need to address what's happening here in our neighborhood and beyond in our city. We have had issues with RVs parking, not just overnight, but for weeks at a time. There have been issues that are unacceptable, not just around homelessness and mental health, but also human trafficking. And I mean, San Francisco, we are a compassionate city. We welcome all who come here. We support them. But we need to have rules in place. We need to obey the rule of law and also ensure that the laws that we have in place protect those who are being victimized as well as those who are living in our neighborhoods. It's not, the law is for everyone. So I do support that. And I think that we could do much better in ensuring that we put people into housing that is not a car.
Thank you, Marjan. And Sherman, support or oppose the RV ban?
I oppose it. We all, when we rent or we own our place, we pay taxes for the place that we live. People are parking their RVs on the street and they're not paying any taxes for their, they're in the public right away. This is unfair to people who rent, people who own their house, and it is not a safe situation. If you drive by Lake Merced, there's trash all around these RVs. It is not fair to the people who have to live in those neighborhoods to have these people residing in RVs on the street. And I completely support it. It should not be permitted anywhere in the city. We can help them get into an apartment, but living in RVs on the street should not be allowed. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherman. Yes. So I think he corrected his stance. So you support the idea to ban the RVs and other oversized vehicles? Yes. Okay. Yeah. And finally, Supervisor Connie?
There are a lot of books, there are a lot of laws on the books, and it's really all about enforcement and our approach to it. When it comes to RV, we know that the Richmond is not an island. We do see RV park on Fulton and La Playa, but we do see more of it at Lake Merced. It's the reason why I've been working with my colleague, Supervisor Myrna Malgar of District 7, and really thinking about what we can do to support those who are living in RVs. And then first, we wanted to offer them housing voucher, emergency housing voucher, and those have been working for only some families, not all families. We understand that. We also wanted to really identify sites that it's appropriate for a triage to allow the RVs actually park in that space so that they can continue to figure out what is should be their next step for permanent housing options. I do want to say this, though. When it comes to these RV, let's separate between those who actually suffer homelessness and then those who are actually conducting criminal activities while they're living in these RVs or even just staying in these RVs. And I think that the enforcement approach will be different.
Thank you. Okay. We're nearing... we're ahead of time, so Danielle brought a few more questions up, but we're nearing the close here. So the next question is, residents find it problematic that there aren't enough trash and recycling bins at the parks and beaches throughout the neighborhoods. Of course, this is the jurisdiction of the Golden Gate National Recreation Area, but is there a way to address this concern by the D1 supervisor, perhaps working with them? We'll start with Marjan.
So I understand it's an adjustment to basically, what is it, pack it up, pack it in, like you bring your stuff and then you take it out. But I do think in that transition period, when we are seeing the effects of not enough trash cans, we need to ensure that one, we do have enough trash cans in the neighborhood. I mean, there's how many times have we talked about, well, at least in my neighborhood, 40th and Fulton and the overflowing trash can that becomes a health hazard, but also ensuring that, you know, in the interim, you know, I'm part of neighborhood cleanups regularly. I've seen a lot of folks on this stage part of neighborhood cleanups regularly. While we are moving to a system where we do have, you know, is it a big belly trash can that they have downtown that actually can hold more trash so that It's not on every corner if people don't want that, but there does need to be a plan in place. I think that if you're asking, can a supervisor work with someone in another jurisdiction? Of course, that's the whole, well, that's a big part of the job, right? It's serving residents of the neighborhood, being accessible, and also making government work for the people who live here, but also as their representative working with the different jurisdictions to get that job done.
Thank you, Marjan. Sherman?
I don't think this should be a jurisdictional issue. You know what? We all, this in our neighborhood, we need to make sure there's no trash over there. So if that means we put out the trash cans over there, so we put out the trash cans and we have somebody come and collect them. In the Richmond district, the problem is not trash cans. If you drive around or you walk around the neighborhood, it's not the trash cans that the problem. The problem is the city can't get their act together to empty the trash cans. Putting trash cans without emptying them does no good. It defeats the purpose. We put the trash cans there so that litter doesn't fall on the floor. But if the can's overflowing, we have trash on the floor. So I think the problem is not trash cans per se, it's how do we maintain those trash cans that we do have. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherman. And Supervisor Connie?
Thank you. Well, I think at the end of the day is, of course, we have multiple jurisdiction and that we can always be collaborative and work together. And I agree with Sherman that it's really about not just about the trash can, but it's really about picking up and but also not just picking up the trash, but also who's picking up the bills to pick up the trash. And so I think those are the conversation that has always been ongoing, and we're going to continue to have those conversations. But let me also just say the city is investing Ocean Beach. This is the reason why you probably see what we call pit stop, which is a mobile restrooms that is along Ocean Beach that allows people to also be able to use bathrooms and restrooms. That's actually has also been an ongoing problem. And I want to get a quick shout out to Supervisor Eric Marr that's in the audience because he had a good idea about having permits for bonfires on Ocean Beach because that was also part of the issues with trash and litter and fire and all that stuff. So, again, it's collaboration, and we have many solutions to it.
Thank you. Okay, we'll move on to a few additional questions.
Can I answer?
Oh, gosh, I did it again. I'm sorry. It's that the name of Jeremiah in there that keeps throwing me off. I think I'm done.
You're doing a great job.
Okay.
I actually disagree. I think we don't have enough trash cans in the district. I get so frustrated when I take my dog for a walk and I have to go for blocks before I can find a trash can to throw the poop in. I agree that we absolutely need to be emptying our trash cans more frequently. And as supervisor, there's a couple of things that we can do to help address the problem of trash in the neighborhood. A lot of that is working with other departments to increase the frequency with which the trash cans get emptied, increase the funding for which we can do that. And also working with the neighbors to help shape behavior. A good friend of mine started a nonprofit during the pandemic to just said, hey, the city's not doing this. We need to do this. And that has deeply inspired me. And part of why I'm running for office too is that we all need to take responsibility to pick up our own trash, to pick up a little bit more trash than we left to make the neighborhood cleaner while working with the city to do our part as well.
Thank you. Now, everyone answered that question, right? Okay. Okay, so now one of the bonus questions, and we'll start with Sherman. We do not yet know which schools in SFUSD will close, but we know that it's planned that some will. What would you do to help families in D1 if schools in our district are impacted?
So that one's a little more difficult because that is a decision the school board has to make. As a supervisor, you're kind of limited in what impact you can have on that particular aspect of the schools. I haven't really given that a thought, to be honest with you. I don't know what a supervisor could do to assist neighbors that are switching schools. I'm sorry, I don't have an answer for you on that one. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Sherman. And Supervisor Connie?
On Wednesday, there is a grant agreement about $26 million for Student Success Fund that the city and county of San Francisco will be allocated to support our public schools. That is what the city supervisor, but also the entire city government must do. We hold our unified school district accountable for the money that our taxpayers is allocated for them to support them. We don't really directly fund the school itself, but we fund the after-school programming. We fund the public enrichment fund. That's part of that. We need to make sure that those funding actually are being spent wisely, including to support the schools so that they are not going to be closed. I do not believe in school closure. They are, do not benefit our community. In fact, I think they create a long-term negative impact. They do not save us money. I will fight tooth and nail to make sure that if there are any school that is being closed or announced to be closed in October, I will fight that. I will make sure we have petition going on to make sure that no school closed down in the Richmond.
Thank you, Connie. And next, Jen.
Yeah. I will be right there beside you fighting. I am a public school parent, and we are on a lot of chats. We are having a lot of conversations. There is a lot of concern right now for our neighborhood and for the families here. And the things that we are doing and the things that we can do as supervisor too are to organize and make noise and fight for keeping our schools open, for keeping communities together. The destruction that will come from taking communities apart it's very, very, very personal for me. And so I will continue to be a staunch advocate for our public schools, for our families, for funding, for community organizing, and making sure that we have, our school board election is this fall as well. Please do homework and find candidates that are going to be very, very strong, active supporters for our kids. Thank you.
Thank you, Jen. And Marjan?
So it's tragic that we are going to see some school closures, whether it's a public school or a parochial school. My kids went to St. Thomas the Apostle, which shut down. That was very traumatic, not just for our family, but the community around us. Those are traumatic events. And when we look at our school board, where we had 3 school board members overwhelmingly recalled by the voters of San Francisco, this didn't happen overnight. It's a culmination of a void of leadership on our school board. So now the state is coming in and mandating these closures. So yes, we do not want schools in the Richmond to close. What will happen if that happens? I think that while the supervisor does not oversee the schools, the supervisor can be a resource and be accessible. I talk a lot about having a neighborhood district office, even if it's just a desk, where families, parents, people who live here in the neighborhood can come in to get the help that they need, because it's hard. I have friends who, you know, when you go through the lottery system, we still haven't worked that out where you can get into your neighborhood school, which is why people are crying and just heartbroken over Great Highway when they have to race across in between their 2 jobs to pick up their kids. So anyway, there's a lot a supervisor can do to support, even though we don't oversee that process.
Thank you, Marjan. Okay, last question. This questioner is concerned that there are people who rent-controlled units when they can clearly afford to pay market rates, thereby taking it away from families that really need it. Is there a way to address this? And we'll start with Connie.
We just learned that there is an individual collecting Section 8 funding and yet also afford a $1 million mansion in San Francisco. And we know that that is a problem, clearly, because then that means those emergency housing vouchers, Section 8 funding, and many other rental subsidies are not going to the people that need it. This is the reason why we have whistleblowers. This is the reason why we have all these programming, auditing the spending of our housing subsidies and rental subsidies, and that so that our city attorney can investigate and make sure that this system actually works for the people that needs it the most. I think that this is really what I want to do if and when reelected, going back to make sure that we tweak our lottery program for affordable housing and below market rate units, but to also to continue to have an ongoing monitor system to make sure that the people who got those support and funding and resources really qualifies for it as well.
Thank you, Connie. And Jen?
People that take advantage, people that can afford to pay, that take advantage of these programs, it can be really hard to catch them sometimes. And so one of the things that we need to do is we need to have harsh penalties for when you do get caught. We need to do what we can to deter this bad behavior and have adequate reporting systems, whistleblower protections. And then if you are found to be using Section 8 vouchers when you can afford a multi-million dollar home, the punishment should fit the crime. There should be a harsh financial penalty for that.
Thank you, Jen. Marjan?
So I think we're talking about two different things, rent control and Section 8, right? When we're talking about rent control and the need to preserve rent control, you know, rent control is a lifeline for so many people. Now, if there is an abuse of Section 8, obviously we need that to be there with transparencies and mechanisms in place where there's a penalty for that. When you look at how people, I mean, we need more housing. Like, I don't even know how many more times I can say it. We need more housing. We need housing for middle-class families. When you see folks who are hanging on to something, right, regardless of whether they made a certain income at one point and that has changed, yeah, that's not right. It's not acceptable, and it needs to be rooted out. At the same time, we need to ensure that there are housing options for middle-class families so that you're not seeing this behavior. And I think that that requires a conversation not just every 4 years, but every day. We need people in office who are going to address this, because I'm tired of waiting, and I know a lot of my neighbors are too.
Thank you, Marjan. And Sherman?
Yeah, I understood the question to talk about rent control in general, so I'll address it in that context. So, you know, unless we're going to audit everybody who's in a rent-controlled unit in their finances, that's clearly not going to work. So, you know, we have to have rent control because majority of people that I know rely on rent control in order to stay in their unit. So, you know, we need to have rent control. But we need to have people to have, we need to have choices for people to move other places if they can get it cheaper. And the way you do that is by increasing the amount of housing we have in the neighborhood. We need to have more housing in the neighborhood. We're not in the 1940s, we're in 2024. We need to have more units in the neighborhood so people are not locked into the unit that they are. They can move to better units if the landlord's not good or they're getting a better price. That's how we do it. We get more units, you get more choices. That's the way it works. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherman. All right, that concludes our questions. And now our candidates will have an opportunity to give a closing statement. So we'll go in reverse alphabetical order by first name, and you'll each have a minute for the closing statement. So we'll start with Sherman.
First of all, I want to thank the League of Women Voters for hosting this and all of you for being here. You know, if you want somebody who's going to be looking at the nuts and bolts in the neighborhood, making sure that the streets are clean, making sure that the roads are paved, I'm your guy. That's what I focus on. You know, there's a lot of things in that need to get done. But for me, when you walk out of your house, the street should be clean, the road should be paved. The median should be clean, the trees should be trimmed. That's what we pay our taxes for. As a taxpayer, I don't feel that we get what we are paying for. And as supervisor, I'm going to make that the priority. So if you think those things are important, I'd really appreciate your support on November 5th. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sherman. And Marjan?
So this November, all of us here in this room and beyond, whoever will end up watching this, we have a choice to make. We have a choice of sticking with what's been happening in this neighborhood for 20 years, and I understand we can't say our supervisor's name tonight, so I will respect that rule. But we have a choice. Are we going to keep having the same conversation every 4 years When I've been going door to door in this cycle for over a year now, and the number one thing that comes up, and it doesn't matter where in the neighborhood, unless someone has already made up their mind, but the number one issue is public safety. So everything we talked about here tonight, housing, street safety, transit, schools, if you look at this neighborhood as a beautiful home that we're living in, and we have all these rooms that maybe need some work, but our roof is caving in and it is leaking, and that is public safety. If we do not address that roof, if we do not address the core public safety issue that everyone deserves, and it's part of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, feeling safe and being safe, then none of this other stuff matters. So you do have a choice this November of sticking with the status quo or moving in a new direction. Thank you.
Thank you, Marjan. Jen?
Hey, thank you. Thank you all for coming out tonight. Thank you, League of Women Voters, for hosting this forum, spending the evening talking about the issues that are important to us in the neighborhood and the things that we care about, and coming up with ideas and not debating, but debating how we are going to work together as a city to take care of as many people as possible is something that I value so deeply. And I thank you, Connie, and I thank you, Marjan, and I thank you, Sherman, for being here and for just showing up for your communities, for the people that you care for. And that is what I'm going to continue to do. Win or lose in November, I am here for this neighborhood. I am going to continue to work with work as your supervisor, and if not, work with whoever is the supervisor to take our great neighborhood and continue to make it more activated, more connected, and get other people encouraged and engaged invested in the neighborhood as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Jen. And we'll conclude with Supervisor Connie.
Well, there are people who offer nothing but to be more than willing to gaslight us with divisive messages and misinformation. And instead of holding City Hall accountable for their failures and incompetence, they're more than willing to rubber stamp policy benefiting billionaires. Well, that's not me. I'm about solution, because Richmond deserves solution. This is the reason why Speaker Emerita Nancy Pelosi, Congressmember Adam Schiff, firefighters, nurses, teachers, and many workers have endorsed my re-election, because they know that my partner, who's a firefighter in the city, and I bought our home in outer Richmond since 2011, raising our 11-year-old. We love the Richmond. We love San Francisco. And as your district supervisor, I have been an independent voice fighting for the Richmond. I bring people together, small business, our residents, our tenants, our seniors, to make sure that we bring smart solutions to the table. This is the reason why, as Time Out Magazine has put it, the Richmond is one of the coolest neighborhoods in the world, and I intend to continue to make sure that it is.
Thank you, Supervisor Connie. So before I make some final remarks, let's please thank our supervisors and candidates for being here. And I also want to really thank everyone for being very respectful during this forum. I'm very impressed. So finally, I'd like to say that on behalf of the League of Women Voters of San Francisco, thank you to the candidates, the voters, and the Internet Archive for hosting us tonight and supporting this nonpartisan forum. To everyone here tonight, tuning on online or watching the recording, thank you so much for participating in our democracy by learning about your choices for the upcoming election. The League of Women Voters will host candidate forums coming up this week and beyond for most local races, including the Community College Board, Mayor, and Sheriff, and in all of the supervisorial districts. Visit our website at lwvsf.org to learn more and to RSVP for these free nonpartisan forums. And most importantly, be a voter. Cast your vote by Election Day on November 5th. Your vote matters. Help build the changes you want to see right here in our district. And together we can build the future of our community block by block. Thank you.